Good morning, MJ.
Good morning, Jones.
Big day today.
Yes.
Lots to do.
Mm-hmm.
Lots to do later this afternoon.
Yeah. Your little smile on your face.
I'm not smiling. You can't see through the mic.
I can see it.
Oh, I see. We have a big surprise for you guys listening right now. A little later in the episode, so stick around for that. Hello, everyone. You're listening to Casual Wednesdays with Doom Rocket. I'm Jared Jones. That's MJ Kramer. We talk about comics every week, or at least we try to. This week, we're going to be talking about DC's Black Label. Its debut starts this week with Batman Damned. So we have a lot to talk about there.
Yes.
But before we get into that, we've got a whole bunch of news, including a big one that dropped last night. So let's get into it. So the first thing, obviously, we're going to talk about is the Captain Marvel trailer.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a nice way to start the morning yesterday.
That made my day.
That made your day?
Yeah, made my week.
Made your week?
Oh, it was great.
Great?
Yes.
So now that it's out and it's already raked in millions and millions and millions of views, not to mention a whole bunch of conspiracy theories about where the story can go and where the heck Carol Danvers has been this entire time during the history of the Marvel Cinematic Universe,
Well, it's before the history of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Technically, that's true. Technically, that's true. And technically, that's not true. Well, Captain America clearly was before the 90s.
But he was frozen in ice during this part of,
that's true.
Of the era.
Oh, God, I didn't even think about that. So when Carol Danvers comes crashing through that blockbuster, Captain America's still stuck to an ice flue somewhere.
Yeah, he's floating in the North Atlantic.
So, MJ, what'd you think about this trailer?
Like I said, I adored it.
Mm.
I woke up, and you had already gotten up, and it was like 8-ish?
8 in the morning.
Yeah.
Just before.
So I was in bed. I watched it on my phone, which is not a good way to watch a trailer for a major motion picture.
No, absolutely not.
But I just wanted to watch it as soon as possible. So I did. And I tweeted about it a little bit, and then I got up and ran around the house.
I had no idea you had already seen the trailer before you made me watch it.
And watched it on the TV.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have, you know, it hooked up to YouTube and stuff. And then we watched it again.
And again.
And then again, and then I made Jared watch it again.
I think we watched it 5 times together.
It might have been more than that, because then I pulled you back before I left for work again, remember?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, so a good solid 6.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
All right, so first impressions. What do you think this movie is going to do, besides obviously being the first female standalone superhero movie Marvel's ever produced?
I don't know. I think it's really interesting that she doesn't seem to like remember her life on Earth.
Yeah, that wasn't a thing in the comics.
So, well, there was one storyline where she was starting to lose some of her memories.
Mm.
Like, from what I can tell, this seems to be pulling a lot from Kelly Sue DeConnick's various storylines during her run.
That's a good place to start.
Yes. No, I mean, honestly, she originated Carol as Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Yeah. so there's this storyline when she sort of starts to lose her memories because of her powers.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that's going to be what it is.
Does she lose her powers in tandem with her memories? Is that what you said?
No. She's losing her memories because of her powers.
Oh, I see.
It was a cool storyline. Kelly Sue's stuff on that book was so good.
Yeah.
I really want to go back and reread all of it before the movie.
Well, they're definitely translating the costume choices from the Jamie McKelvey top to bottom redesign of the costume.
Yes.
So even the Mohawk helmet.
Yes, we get to see the helmet that she's supposed to wear when, you know, she's in space and fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed us this costume like before they showed us the actual red, gold, and blue costume. But she's wearing that green Star Force costume a lot during most of this trailer.
We saw very little of Jude Law.
Yes, which is fine with me.
No, this needed to be Brie Larson's show. Like,
yeah.
This is what the trailer needed to do. Jude Law plays Mar-Vell, the original Captain Marvel, I guess, in some respects. Possible love interest for Brie Larson, which I feel is a little rote.
I hope not.
I hope not, too.
I guess we'll see.
I mean, but why else do you cast Jude Law?
I don't know.
Like, if he's going to be a mentor figure, you cast, I don't know, Liam Neeson or something.
Liam Neeson's like 80 now.
Yeah, but he's still good. He's still got that baritone. I can help you get to where you need to be.
I have a feeling Liam Neeson doesn't want anything to do with these big, dumb superhero movies.
You will see Liam Neeson in a Marvel movie yet. Mark my words.
You think so?
Absolutely.
All right.
Like, I don't know. You could do the voice of Dr. Doom. I'd be totally fine with that.
I want someone with a little bit more of an accent, like slightly Eastern European.
Oh, I see. Accent. I was going to say, what's the matter with the Neeson? There's nothing wrong with it. So how do you feel Sam Jackson looks with the de-aging tech?
It looks good.
It looks good in the trailer.
We only saw little bits.
Mm-hmm.
He talks a lot during the trailer.
He does.
He does not wear his eye patch. So I told you as we were watching, I was like, I wonder if he loses his eye during this movie.
I thought it was really clever that the first time you see him in the trailer, you see him taking off sunglasses, which draws attention to his eyes. I thought that was a nice little flourish there.
And he's so smiley.
He's so smiley because, well, I mean, I guess at this point, he's thinking about hanging up his trench coat? He doesn't have his trench coat yet. But turning in his badge or whatever, S.H.I.E.L.D. is definitely a thing in the 90s because it's been established in Ant-Man and in, I guess, was S.H.I.E.L.D. in Captain America the First Avenger? I can't remember.
S.H.I.E.L.D. is formed after.
After, that's right, by Tommy Lee Jones and Peggy Carter. And,
yeah, and then Peggy Carter's TV series establishes that it was a thing way back then.
That's right. So S.H.I.E.L.D. happened because Cap left. And then it was kind of in dire straits when Hank Pym had a falling out with S.H.I.E.L.D. rather disastrously, smashing somebody's nose. That was fun.
Another de-aged famous actor.
I don't think the tech was there yet when they did it for Michael Douglas and Ant-Man, but
It wasn't that bad, and it still looked a little weird in Civil War when they did it for
RDJ.
Yes.
That's right. Except they were de-aging Robert Downey Jr. from like 50s to early 20s, maybe even teens. So that was a quantum leap in de-aging.
Yes.
So I gave him a wide berth on that.
It was weird how much they made him look like his young actor self. It was creepy.
So what do you think? Ronan the Accuser, played by pretty face Lee Pace.
I love Lee Pace.
He is back. A member of the Kree who historically has a very tumultuous relationship with the Skrulls. They've been in the midst of warfare for as long as these characters have been in comics, I suppose.
And apparently the bad guys for the Captain Marvel movie are the Skrulls.
Officially the Skrulls.
I thought I remember hearing somewhere that because the Skrulls appeared so much elsewhere,
mm-hmm.
similarly to the twins, Wanda and Pietro. Similarly to them, they can be claimed as members of the other, you know, overarching
comic book
families.
I'm just excited to see the Skrulls here.
Yeah.
Because the Super Skrull is a Fantastic Four villain. And so I don't know.
Well, I do think that the Skrulls first originally appeared in Fantastic Four comics.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So where do you think Ronan the Accuser lies in this? Because there are stills that show Ronan intermingling with the Star Force and Jude Law's character, Mar-Vell.
You mainly only see him once in the trailer.
And it's from a back shot.
Yeah, he's just kind of like looking off in the distance. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to see the character again because I think they did him kind of dirty in Guardians of the Galaxy.
They certainly did.
Because Ronan the Accuser, kind of a cool character.
And accused one person. If you're called the Accuser, I'd imagine you accuse at least 5 people in a sitting. Like, it happens a lot.
Well, I think in Guardians, they were implying that he had fallen from grace and mm-hmm. been, you know, corrupted. I don't know.
He becomes like this like zealous, you know, kind of terrorist type in Guardians of the Galaxy at that point. So something gnarly is probably going to happen to him in this movie for sure that sends him on that path.
I'm glad we at least get to see him again.
Oh, yeah. Lee Pace. Man, I was so stoked to see him in Guardians of the Galaxy, especially as Ronan, because I think he crushed it, even though his role was woefully underwritten. But you can't put him in anything else because his presence is so obvious. Because it's Lee Pace.
Because he's great.
So it's like, yeah, I'm glad he's back. Also, Djimon Hounsou returns from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
I didn't realize his
character. Tiny little part.
Yeah, I didn't realize his character was a Kree. I had no idea.
I don't think I did either.
Yeah. Okay, so people are like, why did Brie Larson punch that old lady? The obvious answer is she's a Skrull. The question is, do you think this is Ben Mendelsohn's character?
Who knows? Could be. Yeah. Or not even necessarily that she is a Skrull. Carol thinks she's a Skrull.
Right.
That's what it seems to me. Or she's just super disoriented and has no idea what's going on.
No.
It's a really funny, great little clip.
I'm confident that's a Skrull because it takes place on a train and then later in the trailer or earlier in the trailer, you see her blasting on top of a train, a la The Wolverine 2011. So,
a la The Spider-Man number 2.
A la la. You're so cool. So do you think that Marvel's seeding Secret Invasion into the MCU for Phase 4? And if so, what do you think about that?
I mean, I guess they could be, but I don't bother with that kind of like theorizing the way
you
do.
Yeah, I know you don't.
I just like to enjoy what I have in front of me.
But hey, do me a favor.
What?
Humor me. If we got the Skrulls in the MCU in the 90s, that means that there's bound to at least be one or two Skrulls lurking about present day MCU. Do you think one of the many characters that we have come to love in the Marvel Cinematic Universe could be a covert Skrull?
Obviously, yes. Okay. They can definitely write it that way.
They could.
But I think doing an event on that scale is going to be like them doing Infinity War.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we would get that for a while.
No. I mean, Phase 4 is going to lead to a Phase 5 and a Phase 6. Now, if the phases are as long as Phase 3 are, which are like, what, 13 flipping movies? Like, way too many. Then it's going to get a little unwieldy. I think
they
might
tighten
scope. I wish
they would stop doing phases.
Yeah.
It's so silly.
Well, I mean, at least it gives you goalposts. You know, you got something to aim for.
I guess.
It mounts anticipation. It certainly does. I mean, Infinity War.
For some people.
Yeah, okay, I see.
There are a lot of people who are unaware of the phases. We didn't even mention the fact that you can see a tiny little silhouette of Carol's cat.
Oh, yeah. You've
cat Chewy. In the bottom left corner of the movie poster.
Now, Chewie's not an actual cat.
It's like a cat-shaped alien.
Yeah, so I presume that this cat has, you know, the wherewithal not to knock things off counters.
No. Chewie's actually worse.
Really?
Yeah.
So anyway, well, that's a nice segue towards the future of the MCU, primarily its television ambition. We are segueing to the huge news from last night via Variety.
They're going to be doing, on Disney's own streaming service,
yeah,
they're going to be doing an MCU, and they said it's literally going to be MCU, show featuring Loki, Scarlet Witch, other characters that haven't had their own feature film,
yeah,
in live action.
With like blockbuster budgets.
Yeah.
Now, if I worked for the Netflix MCU, I'd be a little put out right now. I'm like, look, guys, you have nickeled and dimed us into hilarity because the sets on the MCU shows all look the same. Production-wise, is very bland.
Yeah, apparently this is going to be branded, unlike the Netflix ones,
mm-hmm,
Marvel Studios.
Wow. So what kind of characters will we look forward to seeing?
Well, the ones that they mention are Loki and the Scarlet Witch, along with other beloved superheroes who have yet to appear in their own standalone movies. I hope, since Carol is obviously starring in the first lady-led solo Marvel Studios movie, maybe all of the characters in this TV show thing is just going to be all the girls.
Sure, and Loki.
And Loki.
But if they're doing
that'd be fine with me.
I'm sure that'd be fine with you. If they're doing a Loki show, is this going to be a prequel, or is Loki coming back in Infinity War 2?
But every friend I saw posting was like, oh, see, Loki's not really dead. Spoilers for Infinity War, I guess. This could easily be a prequel series.
Yeah.
Could be anything they want it to be.
Tom Hiddleston's got that perennial young boy beauty face.
He's aging a bit.
A bit?
He's aging a bit, yeah.
Yeah, but they have the technology. We can make people young forever now.
That is true. That is true. They can inch his hairline forward.
My goodness.
One thing that I really thought was cool in looking at this,
yeah,
is that each of these series, so I guess they're thinking of more than one,
yeah,
is expected to include 6 to 8 episodes, which is music to my ears.
That's a beautiful number.
Those other, the Netflix Marvel series are so overlong.
They're way too long.
So packed with filler.
I heard that the new Iron Fist season's shorter.
Is it?
Yeah. Still not going to watch it.
I didn't hate him in the Defender series, so I don't know.
Yeah, but he had everyone else to play off of. And I hear that Mike Coulter plays not a substantive role in Iron Fist season 2, but he's in there. It's nice to see them bounce off each other, but I think he needs a Daredevil and a Jessica Jones and a Luke Cage in order for Finn Jones to even register at all.
He was okay as Loras Terrell, okay?
No.
Yeah, he was. He was okay.
So, MJ, speculation time, and your favorite part. What kind of characters do you think could hold their own series? I mean, obviously, I want a Sam Wilson series.
That would imply that those characters survive
Infinity War. Prequels, baby. Prequels.
Actually, a Bucky prequel thing.
Mm-hmm. Winter Soldier with Nat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Cool.
Where they like meet up during their training in Russia, which is a lot of what Brubaker did in his Winter Soldier series.
Yeah.
I would dig that.
I'm sure that you would.
I'm trying to think of what else. I would love anything with all the other Asgardians, since they're all fucking dead now.
Mm-hmm. Valkyrie, for example?
Valkyrie or Sif, since we haven't seen Sif in a while.
Oh, man, Sif in a Valkyrie show would be great. Both of those characters are awesome. I miss Sif and Ragnarok. I feel like that was like, but where the hell would she have been?
Well, at least she's not dead now.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, as far as we know.
Yeah, where the hell is Sif? I haven't even thought about that until just now. Asgard's gone. Half of what was left of Asgard is gone. Presumably the other half is floating around with Valkyrie somewhere. Where is Sif, guys? I'm dying here. Jimmy Alexander, give me answers.
I can't believe you didn't think of that at the end of Thor Ragnarok / beginning of Infinity War.
I was too aghast with all the fucking gross jokes in that movie.
I was upset at the lack of her. Okay.
Yeah, I was upset too. Yeah, it's a shame. All right, MJ. We got to move on to the topic at hand, but is there anything else you want to say about the MCU at this point in time?
I'm real stoked about seeing Captain Marvel. It comes out 4 days before my birthday.
That's true.
So everybody's invited to go see it with us in the theater for my birthday party.
You got to get your own damn tickets, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's best my birthday party.
And I get to sit next to you. That's the rules.
I guess.
Oh, man. All right. This week's topic, we are talking about DC Black Label, primarily Batman Damned number one. I had no idea that they were going to publish the book so damn pretty.
You mean like the big trim size?
Yeah, it's like it's magazine size. It's 48 pages.
It has a spine to it. It's not stapled. Yeah.
Of course, it'll trade well and it'll hardcover even better. But
yes,
as it stands, as its own single $7 issue, you could do far worse. I mean, you could go buy a Marvel number one for that.
No, it looks very pretty. Mm-hmm. The one thing that I have seen a few retailers complaining about is the way that it shipped. It was like packs of 20 of it were like bound up in plastic and banded with like a plastic band.
Oh, no.
So it wasn't shipped super great. We didn't have too many damages, but some other stores did.
Yeah.
So maybe they should think about... I mean, I think DC didn't realize this when they shipped it. DC higher-ups, they didn't know it was going to ship that way because they, you know, haven't done this size before. But I mean, mostly they look really good.
Yeah.
Historically, sales on weird sized books like this have always been kind of weird.
Yeah, in what way?
Well, like, okay, most recently there was an IDW series called Highest House.
Yes.
That was not solicited as being magazine size, but the team from the original Lucifer series, Mike Carey and Peter Gross, did this series. It was really cool. Mm-hmm. And it came to us and it was like, oh, hey, magazine size. It didn't sell super great. A lot of comic readers, I guess, are like weirded out by the fact that they're not going to be able to keep it in, you know, their regular long boxes.
Yeah, I mean, where are you supposed to put it?
Well, listeners, you can keep it in your magazine-sized long boxes with magazine-sized bags and boards.
That's true.
If you're so concerned. But honestly, like, it has a bound spine. You can keep this on the shelf if you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why people care that much about it. If it's a cool read.
And it looks great on a coffee table.
Yes.
Makes you look sophisticated, I suppose, with the DC Black Label.
When your cat's not knocking it over.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Friggin' cats. So Black Label announced its line back in June of this year, and it's an impressive line. Of course, most of it's Batman or Batman adjacent.
They actually announced some of the stuff back in March.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you got me there. Amongst Batman Damned, following will be Superman Year One, allegedly. Who knows? We've actually yet to receive anything in solicitations.
Supposedly, it's going to be coming out like November, December, but we still haven't seen anything.
Nothing in solicits. Yeah. Solicits came out early this month, so we're going to do that next week, but it's conspicuously absent from the DC solicits. And then we have the...
Frank Miller being late.
Yeah, I know. We'll talk about it when it comes out, but yeah, man. The other history of the DC Universe, which is written by John Ridley, who did The American Way... for Vertigo.
Yeah, no other creators announced on that one.
Yeah. And then we have Batman Last Night on Earth, which is Snyder and Capullo doing their swan song, their Batman swan song. And then, of course, Batman 3 Jokers, written by Jeff Johns, with art by Jason Fabek, and colors by, I'm pretty sure, Brad Anderson, because those cats like to work together.
But the way cooler one is Wonder Woman Historia, the Amazons.
The crown jewel, I would say.
From Kelly Sue DeConnick and Phil Jimenez. Mm-hmm. That one... I mean, like, they've both been talking about working on it. I don't know where they are in the process of that.
Yeah.
But that one is going to be another three-book thing, assumedly in issue form like this, because some of them are apparently coming out issue form, some are coming out collected.
Yeah.
Like, they haven't said that necessarily these are all going to be the same format.
Well, because they're re-releasing a lot of old DC titles under the Black Label, which
they,
will be
that
under.
They are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, like, for example, White Knight which just wrapped, is being republished under the Black Label imprint. In fact, for Batman Day, free copies of White Knight number one had the Black Label on it.
Mm-hmm. That has not happened yet, because they did release a trade paperback collection of it. That was not like the Black Label version, because apparently the Black Label version, you'll get to see Harley's titties.
Oh, can't wait for that.
Yeah.
Is that the reason why they're doing this, so they can finally put schlong and boobs and shit in their superhero comics? Because is that what we were missing?
That's what it kind of feels like. I just think, and I've talked to you about this before, and probably on the podcast, that so many superhero fans just want to read something that takes itself extra seriously so that they can feel like their hobby is serious.
Oh, come on.
So they can feel like they're not reading something made for kids, which comics haven't been made for kids in years and years.
I know. It's
why,
like,
why this insecurity about it?
Hello, New 52. Starfire's tits were out in all of the Red Hood and the Outlaws at the beginning of the New 52. Her nipples were popping out. What more could you possibly want? What do you people need? Is this... I don't know. Batman Dan caught me off guard, because I wasn't prepared, because DC shows so little schlong in their books that Batman's dick kind of threw me off a little bit.
Well, Marvel and DC are never going to show like full nudity in their main titles.
Right. I was like, how is this like an R-rated comic book? This is pretty teen plus standard, like semi-violent, maybe a naughty word here or there.
I think there's some bad language.
Yeah, a little here or there.
And some blood.
But then, bam. Dong. Not, you know, overtly. I mean, it's cast in shadow.
Yeah, it's very tastefully lit.
It is. It is very tastefully
it's
lit.
It's in silhouette.
But that means that Batman goes commando every single night in Gotham City. I mean, he's wearing that, like, you know, armor, so I'm sure he's wearing a cup. But well, is he?
Maybe there's underwear built into the suit, which is gross, because that would be, like, that would get real gross. Unless he's, like, has some kind of auto wash for it once he takes it off and puts it in its display case.
And spare a thought for Alfred, who actually has to clean the cheese out of the Batsuit at the end of every romp. It's gnarly when you start going down this rabbit hole, because the logical conclusions are in themselves juvenile. Like, if you're trying to be really mature about it, everyone's going to go tee-hee, wee-wee, because it's comic books, guys. What are we doing here?
That's why I don't see the point in wanting to have, you know, these serious comic books that are made for adults. It's like, just... Do them like normal.
And do them well.
Yeah. There's no need to make them for adults, so you feel like you're reading an adult thing instead of a childish thing that you've been doing since you were probably like 11.
Like everyone's
okay.
Yeah,
it's
everyone
okay.
Talks about the halcyon days of the late 80s, early 90s, where, or even the mid to late 80s, where we had Watchmen and V for Vendetta, which was even originally published by DC, I don't think. Later got claimed by the Vertigo brand. And then books like The Dark Knight Returns. And it's like, those books were of a moment. And now you're trying to recapture that moment. It's lightning in a bottle. It doesn't happen by force. It has to happen naturally. It's a confluence of the perfect conditions, the best creative team, the best editor, the best subject matter, the appropriate superhero, or whatever. And then it comes together to make this game-changing book. You can't just say this changes the game, because that's presumptuous and people can spot phoniness from a mile away.
Well, I understand their want to rebrand the older things, but I don't necessarily think they should rebrand it as this. Because, like, why do you have to brand All-Star Superman in with the same thing as under the same umbrella as Batman Damned?
It doesn't make any sense, yeah.
That is one of the most all-ages friendly, yet perfectly great for adults, perfectly enjoyable for adults. And there's really no need to put it in the same category as the book where you can see Batman's dick.
I know, I'm trying to, like, I'm really struggling to see how All-Star Superman occurred to them that this should be a Black Label title.
I think what they're trying to do is trying to be like, that these are our collections of works that are, you know, the masterpieces. These are, you know, the top shelf.
That's
the Black Label.
Because scotch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You don't need to label your comics like you do your alcohol. Sorry. Yeah.
And I like booze. Don't get me wrong. I don't like scotch. But you know,
I don't either.
I get it. But like, they're putting Frank Miller's Ronin on there. That makes sense. I get it. There's a lot of dong in there too. Kingdom Come makes sense. There's some tush.
I guess. But like, it's just, I don't know.
And then DC, The New Frontier.
Yeah. I mean, that it makes sense in the respect that DC in the last year or two has gotten very smart about things and is deciding to specifically market its books to specific markets of readers.
Right.
So, you know, the Black Label is going to be for the more, not necessarily typical comic book reader, but like a reader who wants to read, like, you know, good, semi, almost literate stuff. In which I say, where's your fucking Sandman Black Label? Jeez.
Yeah, no kidding.
And then they're doing their DC Ink and DC Zoom to aim at like the middle grade readers and the young adult readers.
Right.
They're trying to make their way into the book market, because the regular comic direct market, who knows what the fuck is going on with it.
This is a really good opportunity, I think, for them to reprint some old stuff to get it back into that. If that's the case, if they're trying to appeal to like the library crowd, if ALA is going to have a big Black Label panel next year, for example. I don't think that's going to happen. But if that's the route they want to take, they certainly could by reprinting books like, say, Black Orchid from Gaiman, Books of Magic from back in the day. I mean, I don't know if that's technically Sandman Universe stuff.
I wonder if they'll be able to print Vertigo things under this label, because I don't know if they're still being like really hard and fast about that distinction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what is the distinction other than putting beloved DC characters, like DCU characters, and putting them into an adult context?
Well, a couple of years ago, like around New 52-ish, the reason they moved Constantine and Swamp Thing over is because they didn't want to have any licensed characters in Vertigo. But now the main flagship titles of Vertigo are the Sandman books, which are licensed characters that seem to have, you know, I don't know about ownership, but they're definitely...
Like, Snyder had to ask permission to use Daniel and Metal.
Yeah, they definitely seem to still be under Neil Gaiman's purview.
Yeah.
Like, he still seems to have control over how they use those characters.
Rightfully so.
Yes, so I'm wondering what the distinction is as far as licensed characters go. That,
if any.
That they can stay in the Vertigo universe, and that everybody else has to be in the DC universe, and that... What does that mean for any of those being collected as Black Label?
It's a fine line. I think that with Black Label, it's either going to represent the worst impulses DC has as a superhero publishing line, or it's going to exemplify its greatest instincts, like putting the top, like certain creators together to make these really innovative works. Like Kingdom Come is an amazing piece of art. It's an amazing piece of comic art, and I'm sure it'll look great reprinted under the Black Label imprint, for example. That fits for me. Like, reading Damn number one and realizing that White Knight, while wasn't my cup of tea, I feel that if you're going to make this work, you're going to have to wean yourself off of Batman. You're going to have to wean yourself off of a character that is kind of already like this in his own book. Not in the Tom King era, but, like, is like this in the Snyder era, say.
It's just like any other Batman story to me.
Yeah, I know. When reading Batman Damned, I was like, hey, this is like if they let Brian Azzarello do a Justice League Dark and Batman team up. It has a semblance of sophistication to it, I suppose. But it's also...
The art gives it that.
It's also meaty and thick.
Yeah.
Just like any Brian Azzarello story, where everyone talks tough, like they just stumbled drunk out of a James Ellroy novel. Everyone's either got a hard-on for violence or stopping somebody committing violence with violence. Azzarello tells stories of angry men, and that's what Batman Damned is. It's a story about Batman waking up from a stupor, stabbed, and is being accused of murdering, of all people, the Joker.
But later on in the story, he doesn't have any stab wounds at all.
Exactly, and throughout the entire narrative, we have John Constantine walking in and going, "Hey, mate, looks like you're having a rough time, mate." And like they're trying to figure out this mystery together, and Zatanna pops by, and like the Liber Mijo street level redesigns, I think, work in this story.
Well, we have to pause and mention Liber Mijo's art.
Oh yeah.
Because whatever flaws we may find in
the story itself, sure.
The writing is nothing to do with Mr. Bermeo's art, which is gorgeous.
This is career best stuff from Lee.
It's beautiful.
It's really something to look at. Now, I don't know if it was a Mark Doyle thing where it's like, just, you know, there's a lot of pages here and there are a lot of panels. Make sure that we've got somebody saying something, whether it be, you know, bodiless captions or dialogue.
Yeah, I don't love the...
But it's ceaseless. It just doesn't stop. Like, you don't have time to really soak it in because you're constantly reading something in the really hard to read letters of the Constantine narrative.
Yeah, the narration is... It's not in caption boxes. Mm-mm. It's just...
Letters
typeface on top of the art. And it's a font that isn't super easy to read, and it's real big.
Mm-hmm.
And it
it's bony.
I guess I can understand that choice, but I don't know that I would have made that choice.
I would understand it if it was used sparingly. Like if Constantine came and went and we like had long quiet moments where Batman was like trying to get his shit together and get back to the Batcave and figure out what happened, and Constantine comes in and makes things a little more surreal and we have to question what reality is, that's good stuff. But when John Constantine's constantly talking, we know where we're at. We're watching this crazy shit happen from the purview of John Constantine.
It's a little less intrusive having all of that narration be on the page the way that it is. It's mm-hmm. not, you know, big blocks of white or something else covering up the art. Right. So that's good. But it's not super easy to read,
nope.
especially with the sort of, Azzarello writes it in dialect. It's very Cockney.
Yeah.
It's very Dick Van Dyke and Mary Poppins.
Yep.
So, I mean, that on top of all that other stuff makes it a little harder to read.
Yeah. I love John Constantine. He's one of my favorite characters. And I love Brian. I think he's an awesome guy. I do. I don't know if I enjoyed this book as much as I could have. I think if you scale back how much John needs to have a chat with us, the reader, I think you really got something here. Because the concept is interesting to a degree. I love the cover, for example. I did a write-up for it for this week's Undercover, and it's like, it does exemplify the story itself. It's like, if Batman did do something like this, he had crossed his own line to kill the Joker for the betterment of whatever, or whatever situation he was in to do it, the Joker's still going to live on in him to a point, because the Joker has rooted himself so deeply in the Batman psyche.
Yeah, but I do appreciate the inclusion of the supernatural element in this mm-hmm. book, which yeah. definitely makes it, you know, out of continuity.
Best bits for me were Dead Man.
The Dead Man bits were cool. I'm assuming that the character towards the end, the little girl, is Enchantress?
Yeah, she has to be.
Looks a hell of a lot like her if it's not.
Yeah. That's June Moon.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, not June Moon, Enchantress.
Sure.
Her other personality.
Did you like Zatanna?
I liked Zatanna.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it might go to a cool place, this story. I don't necessarily like the entire execution,
mm-hmm.
but I mean,
if you had to give it a rating, what would you give it?
I guess all in all, including like the beauty of the format
mm-hmm.
and
it's designed so beautifully,
and just Libramayo's art, just, you know, knocking the breath out of my lungs. It's so pretty.
Yeah.
Probably. It makes up for everything else and gives it an 8, I would say.
Give it an 8? I'd give it a solid 8.5.
Yeah.
Yeah. I enjoyed it to a degree. I think the narration's a bit overmuch, and the lettering is not the easiest to read, as we said. And
which is weird, because Jared Fletcher, the letterer, is awesome on lots
really
of other
good.
Things.
Yeah, he's really good.
Yeah.
It had to have been an editorial edict.
I guess.
Or a design edict.
But like I said, it makes sense in being less intrusive to the art.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I can think
of. I'm reading all these issues. When they come out.
Oh, yeah.
I'm excited for this.
Yeah.
Not so excited about the future of Black Label. We'll see. It's interesting times we live in, MJ.
Well, you know, like I said, they're aiming towards their audiences, and this is smart for them to do this.
This is
a good way to do it.
Had a customer come into my bar the other day. He's a huge Joker fan. He had a Joker tattoo. And
gross.
I just got to talking to him, and he was pretty much as you would imagine. Read comics in the 90s. Loves the Killing Joke. Loved the Killing Joke movie. Love BVS. And we had a nice long conversation.
Did you kick him out of
your bar? No, I'm not an asshole. Like, I said, hey, man, let's have a talk about it. I bought him a shot, and we chatted for a long time. He actually stayed in tip pretty good, too. So that cat's going to love this book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although you don't see much Joker in it. Sad.
Not yet. I love the way Libramayo draws Joker. I love it.
It's well, for that, he can read their Joker book that they did.
It's true. All right, MJ, we got to move on to the top five. You ready for it?
Yeah.
All right, let's do it. All right, I'm going to have you start us off this week, if that's okay with you.
That's fine with me.
Please, take it away.
My first pick is Gabriel Rodriguez's Sword of Ages from IDW.
Nice.
Created, written, and illustrated by Gabriel Rodriguez. Colored by Lovern Kinzierski, lettered by Robbie Robbins. This is the fifth and at least final issue of the storyline. I'm not mm-hmm. sure if it's the final of the whole thing.
We'll see.
But it's really cool fantasy. his art's amazing, and he's a really good writer too. So, Sword of Ages number 5. Go check that out. Check out the collection when it comes out.
I can't wait to read it. Oh, yeah. I have all the issues over there. I just haven't started it yet.
So pretty.
Yeah.
What's your first one, Jones?
My first pick is Batman Dam number 1. We'll just get this out of the way, from DC's Black Label. As debuts go, you could do far worse. This is written by Brian Azzarello, art by Lee Bermejo, letters by Jared K. Fletcher. Who did the design? You've got it over there.
Mr. Steve Cook.
Steve Cook. Give that man a raise. That book is gorgeous. Absolutely.
And Mr. Will Dennis did editorial consulting on it. Will Dennis is a longtime Vertigo editor. Worked with Azzarello and Bermejo a bunch. He's great. I'm glad he worked on it.
No. This was good creative team, I feel. We talked at length at the beginning of the episode, but I recommend it heartily. Check it out. Batman Dan number 1 is out this week from DC Black Label. MJ, what's next for you?
My second pick for the week is West Coast Avengers number 2, written by Kelly Thompson. Art by Stefano Caselli. Colors by Triana Farrell. Letters by Joe Caramagna. Caramagna.
Magna.
Yeah. This is a really, really fun series.
The
first issue actually sold out, which is super, super exciting.
That rules.
Because it seemed like it was going to be kind of like a more under the radar kind of book. But yeah, no, it's great. A West Coast Avengers team led by Kate Bishop with Gwenpool and America Chavez. It's a real fun book. Go pick it up.
Check it out.
What's your second pick this week, Jones?
My second pick from Aftershock Comics, a new debut from them, Patience, Conviction, Revenge.
That is such a great title.
It is it's amazing ridiculous. Title. That alone is the reason why it's here, but the team certainly helps. It's written by Patrick Kinlan, he of many Black Mask books, art by Marco Ferrari, colors by Patrizia Comino, and letters by Jim Campbell. We ran a preview of it on doomrocket.com. You're welcome to check it out. In the meantime, it's out today. Patience, Conviction, Revenge, number 1 from Aftershock, out this week. MJ, what's next for you?
All right, my third pick for the week is another Marvel book. It is the Captain America Annual, written by our friend Teenie Howard, penciled by Chris Sprouse with Ron Lim, inked by Carl Story, Walden Wong, and Scott Hanna, colors by Jesus Abertov, Eric Arseniega, and Israel Silva, letters by, again, Joe Caramagna.
I fully endorse this pick.
Yeah. There are 2 annuals out this week. I thought about putting the other one on there too, which is Amazing Spider-Man Annual, written by Saladin Ahmed.
Yeah.
It's really exciting that they are giving these sort of up-and-comers these annuals to write in their big, huge flagship titles over at Marvel. This one takes place like during World War II in the 40s. Mm-hmm. Get to see Cap fighting some actual Nazis.
How cool is it that Teenie gets to write an annual during the Ta-Nehisi Coates run of Captain America?
Oh, it's great.
It's huge.
Great. Yeah. So, yeah. That's my pick. What's your third pick this week?
My third pick is Mr. Miracle, number 11, the penultimate issue, written by Tom King, art by Mitch Gerrits, and letters by Clayton Cowles.
That was my third pick.
Oh, hey, cool. That works. That works for me. You got the Gerrits cover.
I always get the Mitch Gerrits cover.
Yeah, that one freaks me out a little bit.
Did you read the issue yet?
No. I'm 3 issues behind.
Okay. It's great.
I'm sure it's great.
It's got a cool reveal at the end.
I picked this instead of Batman number 50 whatever. Because of, I'm not going to spoil it for you guys this week, but I'm not happy with it.
Well, they've kind of spoiled it themselves, but it's an upsetting ending, Batman 55.
And it should have taken place in Nightwing, own damn book. I don't like what's happening right now. I'm not happy about it.
Well, it's kind of weird that someone else should decide the direction of Nightwing's story.
Yeah. I don't know if this is a direct reason why Ben Percy's leaving the book, but I'm not happy with what's going on right now in the Batman books. Saying that out loud.
Yeah, I'm not happy with it either.
And another note, news item that we skipped today is that the Batman books have dropped below the 100,000 mark post-wedding, but that's not uncommon.
Yeah.
But my worry is that DC's going to insist on putting these big life-altering events on Batman every 10 or 15 issues just to keep the spikes up. And I don't do that. Let Tom King tell his stories. Dang it. Anyway. Mr. Miracle happens out this week. We both encourage you to pick it up.
Okay, and that was my pick too. So what is your next pick?
My next pick is Dick Tracy, Dead or Alive number 1 from IDW Publishing.
Oh.
They are currently eating Archie Comics lunch. Because, I really feel like we missed out on something special with what Mike Morrissey were going to do with Dick Tracy over there. In the meantime, we've got the All Reds all over this, and it's awesome. Lee Allred wrote it. Rich Tomaso, he of Spy Seal, is currently in Dry County, is currently doing the pencils, and it's inked by Mike Allred, colors by Laura Allred, and the letters are by Sean Lee.
Tommaso was also soon to be doing some issues for our favorite series, Black Hammer.
It's true. I'm very excited to see that. Tommaso's great. Mm-hmm. Love his art. So anyway, Dick Tracy, Dead or Alive, is out this week. It's a cool new debut. I read it. It's really hard-nosed. Dick Tracy's a little brutal in this one.
Really?
Like, it's like Azzarello wrote him. But yeah, check it out. Dead or Alive, number one's out. Bright Pop Crime Comics. It's good stuff. MJ, what's last for you?
Thor, number 5.
What a surprise.
From Marvel Comics. This is the start of like a new little story arc written by Mr. Jason Aaron, my fave, with art by Christian Ward. I think he's only doing 2 issues, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
He was doing like some little shorts at the end of the last couple issues. Letters and production by VC's Joe Sabino. This is a really cool like future King Thor story.
All those are great.
Yes. As we all know from reading Odyssey, Christian Ward excels immensely at crazy cool psychedelic cosmic art. Perfect fit for this. It's a great issue.
Sweet.
Yeah. So you have one last pick?
I have one last pick, okay. If you'll indulge me.
Yes.
There's a book coming out this week I'm pretty excited about. It's from our friend Gene Ha. May, Volume 2, Number 3, or May, Number 9, depending on how you like to keep score. It's a little confusing line 4, so let's get that figured out. But this issue is special for a couple of reasons. Its art is from creator Gene Ha. Its colors are from Wes Hartman, with assist by Summer Sparrison, and letters by the great Xander Cannon. But it's written by somebody particularly special in my life, Molly Jane Kramer. This is MJ's comic book debut, and it's freaking me out. I am holding your comic in my hand right now, and I love you so much. This is great. Congratulations, MJ.
Thank you, Jonesy.
MJ has a signing tonight at G-Mark Comics from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock here in Logan Square. If you live in Chicago,
Along with Gene.
If you live in the Chicago area, please consider coming out and saying hello to MJ and wishing her well. This is a hard-won win. Good for you.
Thanks.
May, Volume 2, Issue Number 3, or Number 9 is out today. Pick it up.
Ah, oh, you're making me all blush and teary-eyed.
You're a blush. Oh, man. All right. Every week we take the social media to ask you guys a pressing question on our minds. And this week's question, technically last week's question, we'll talk about that more in a minute. Are you playing Spider-Man on PS4? If so, give us your spoiler-free review. MJ, will you please take it away?
On Facebook, Pat Loika says, I hope J. Jonah Jameson is happy because of all the pictures of Spider-Man this game has produced.
Oh. Over on Twitter, Adam Hughes at @AH_AdamHughes said, due to making comics, I cannot play it until November.
And replying to that, Mitch Geritz said, due to comics, I cannot play it till the afterlife.
Oh. Back over on Facebook, Mike DeVivo said, played it a bit over the last 2 days, and I have to say it feels like an important and genuinely good story is being told, and this is the first time you feel like you have weight and momentum swinging around the city. I'm pretty, pretty into it.
At Philip Sevi on Twitter said, it's Skyrim with Spider-Man, and I say that as the highest praise. Completely in love with it.
Over on Instagram, Hamster Rage said, most of it is pretty great, except 1, some wonky controls, heavy learning curve, 2, too much on-the-rails stuff, i.e. the boring MJ and Miles missions, 3, really awkward and kind of ugly human character models, and 4, Miles relegated to MCU Black Best Friend instead of Spider-Man.
At C_Parksy on Twitter said, characters are shockingly realistic for a game based off of comic books. Swinging is fun and involved, small but welcome twists for each character that's introduced. It's honestly the only game that's made me cry after the ending. And by realistic, I mean relatable and understandable. No one has far-fetched motives or completely insane for the sake of insanity.
Mm-hmm. Ryan Dowell at RyanDowell31 said, a borderline religious experience, a perfect 7.5. On Twitter, AJ Angel at AJ Angel Parker said, best Spider-Man PS4 game ever, super addictive and fun, a bunch of Easter eggs from everything, totally worth it.
At Jan Era on Twitter said, fun action game, ugly character models. Peter is hideous but looks great as Spidey. New suit looks really good.
We got time for one more, MJ, please. Take it away.
At Bearded Outlaw 31 on Twitter said, I have one word. Amazing. I don't agree about Peter. He looks fine.
Since we didn't get to talk about this last week because our computer crashed at the end of recording our episode. We had a beautiful episode all about Spider-Man PS4 for
it
you guys last week.
It was a legit good episode.
We had a lot of fun doing it, and then the crash happened and we lost the file. So apologies from me for having crappy equipment whilst recording this podcast, but that's just what happens sometimes. To make it up, we'll have a quick little chat about Spider-Man PS4. Some positives. Character models are not ugly in the least. They are magnificent. The facial recognition and motion capture is top flight. Whatever Insomniac Games had for their budget, I'm sure the number I have in my mind isn't even near what it actually was. They got actual actors to do the performances. The voice work is phenomenal, especially Peter Parker.
MJ's actually written like a human being.
MJ's actually written by a human being. She's a journalist for the Daily Bugle. And this instead of like, hey, I'm a model and what's up? I'm going to get kidnapped.
Her and Peter work together a bunch.
Yeah.
She even saves him.
They're partners.
Yes.
They're like, it's written like an actual couple wrote it. Like, they have foibles and they have problems and they're in the midst of a breakup and they're post-breakup and they're trying to figure what that means because they still want to be in each other's lives because she knows who Spider-Man is and all this stuff.
They're just, like, written as just good, normal, complicated people.
Yeah.
Not like, you know, this really hot redhead with huge tits that Peter likes.
So great. MJ's great. Miles Morales is great.
Miles is awesome.
Miles, I feel like they're giving him an origin story. Clearly they are in this game. I maxed it out a little while ago. But
that's one nice thing about recording our comments about it now is that we have finished the game at this point.
But still no spoilers. I feel like the villains were handled really, really well. Each of them have motivations of their own and a reason to be in the game. They do the Sinister Six, which is...
So many villains,
but it's all balanced really, really well. And there's a couple of, like, two-on-one fights. Like, you fight the Rhino and the Scorpion at the same time, which was a little stressful for me. There are a couple of dreamlike Scarecrow sequences a la Arkham via Scorpion's Venom, which I'm not sure I was 100% into. Same with Mr. Negative. He takes you to another reality and you have to fight ghosts and such, which kind of took me out of it a bit. But as far as the learning curve is concerned, I thought it was magnificent. It was the first game I've had in a long time that made me have to learn all the moves instead of focusing on one. And the cool thing is, with all the upgrades with the suits, you get to keep the upgrades regardless of the suit you're wearing. That's a great idea.
You were so happy playing this game. It was pretty adorable.
I was web swinging last night just to like get the little, you know, physic trophies because I'm 92% trophies and I'm missing a few. But web swinging does not get old. Oh my God, it's so much fun. The music gets a little old after a while.
Jared took much joy in saying, I'm Spider-Man.
I am Spider-Man. My only beef is that it doesn't have a new game plus. And DLC ain't out yet. So I'm just kind of like twiddling my thumbs here, like wanting to play more Spider-Man. I'm going through withdrawals. So I give that
It's okay. Spider-Man's menace.
As soon as I get some time, I'm actually going to write a review for it. Like, I want to. I already have the graphics made. Like,
good.
It's ready to rock. I got to write this damn thing. Who's got the time? Play Spider-Man. And that's it. That's all the time we have for this installment of Casual Wednesdays. Need more of this dweeby little podcast in your life? Check out our 70-episode archive over on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcasts. Rate and subscribe, tell us how we're doing, or search Casual Wednesdays over at DoomRacket.com. New episodes every Wednesday afternoon. And if you're in the Chicago area, come out to G-Mart Comics in Logan Square from 6 to 8 p.m. for an exclusive signing of May Volume 2, Number 3 by artist and creator Gene Ha and writer Molly Jane Kramer. That's at 2641 North Kedzie Avenue here in Chicago. Call 773-384-0400 for more details or visit us at facebook.com/gmartcomics. And thanks. And look us up on Twitter. I'm at @JaredJones_MJ. Where can they find you?
@MollyJane_K.
Thank you. So until the day Batman learns how to wear a damn cup, I remain Jared. That's MJ. And from all of us here at DoomRacket.com, have a great new comic book day. We were going to talk about his dick.
Well, of course we were.
What do people expect?